Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Katie Spotts in Ohio. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
You know, I've been very excited learning about and reading about what you're doing.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. And maybe you can tell us what you're up to.
Well, right now I'm working on a project. It's called Row for Water, and it's a 2,500-mile row solo across the Atlantic Ocean from West Africa to South America to raise funds and awareness for the Blue Planet Run Foundation. And they work all around the world to help communities gain access to safe drinking water.
Wow. Wow. You say that so matter of fact. I'm not sure all of our listeners were able to take that in. So I'm going to reflect that back a little bit. You're going to get in a boat by yourself in Africa, and you're going to row across the Atlantic Ocean to South America. About a year from now, I understand.
Yes, and it will take about 70 to 100 days.
Wow, 70 to 100 days. And you're raising money and awareness for the need for clean, fresh drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about your background in athletics and endurance athletics and all that.
Well, I guess it started with running. When I was about 18, I did my first marathon, and that grew into ultra marathons and a bike ride, a 3,300-mile bike ride across America for the American Lung Association when I was 19.
Uh-huh.
And I recently finished a 325-mile swim on the Allegheny River in Pennsylvania for the Blue Planet Run Foundation as well.
Wow.
So really any sort of endurance sport I'm really passionate about, and it's just that mental challenge that keeps me coming back for more.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's exciting. And so this is for the Blue Planet Run Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about them and the need for clean, fresh drinking water.
Okay. Well, right now, about one-fifth of the human population do not have access to safe drinking water. And this is not only a health concern, but a concern for the environment and even education and so forth. But what they're doing is they're working in Africa and Asia, South and Central America, and they're doing hands-on sort of work with wells and hand pumps and rainwater tanks and helping communities gain access to safe drinking water. Currently, they've done around 184 water projects in about 18 countries, so they're definitely doing some great work.
Wow, that is great. And you said 20% of the population in the world doesn't have access to clean drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, by my calculation, that's over a billion people.
Mm-hmm. The most basic human need.
Yes, most basic human need. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the work that Living Compassion does in Africa, but for me, so Living Compassion dug well there to get fresh water for the community there, and it was just such a tremendous accomplishment, and I just remember the excitement for myself, you know, when I learned about it and read about it. It was just amazing.
Yeah, very transformational for these communities.
Yes, yes. Katie, I was reading your website, which I'm not sure if you mentioned it, rowforwater.com. That's R-O-W-F-O-R. WATER.com, and you have a page there where you talk about the rower, which would be you.
Yeah.
And there's a question there: are you afraid of the dangers you may face at sea? And I just loved your response. You wrote here, "Fears are a heavy burden that I am too lazy to carry around. Although my fears are not my source of motivation, if I was to have a fear, my greatest fear would be to let my fears make my decisions for me and not row across the Atlantic Ocean. I tend to be more excited than fearful about facing the unknown." It's just so wonderful.
Thank you.
And to me, it ties in with the work we do with awareness practice. And so I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you got in contact with Living Compassion and Sherry Huber.
Well, one of my friends did one of the Vipassana retreats, and he was just saying how beneficial that was for him. So I really did not practice before that. He just said how great it was and how challenging it was, and then, you know, a couple weeks later I was there. But yeah, so that's where it started. And from that, I mean, I got a bit more involved with the Buddhist community at my school at Warren Wilson College.
Yeah.
And I picked up one of Sherry's books. I think it was actually There's Nothing Wrong With You. And started reading some more of her books. And yeah, that's pretty much how I got linked to her, just through reading her books. But they definitely helped me along on my path. And yeah, a lot of people, you know, ask me about like the mental aspect of the row. And I think that through meditating, I mean, this is, it's, I don't know. I don't know how I could do something like this if I didn't, to be honest, but.
You don't know how you could do something like this if you didn't.
Yeah.
Sounds like if you didn't have that as a support for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As you're going through this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you talk on your website about how you're preparing, and there's the physical aspect of it, the mental aspect of it, and the ocean training. And it sounds like they really, each aspect of it is really critical in supporting the other ones.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I know for me, when I read There's Nothing Wrong With You and my work in awareness practice, what I see, it starts to become more clear to me how I get in my own way, what obstacles I'm bringing to a given situation, and that's just been so helpful for me.
Oh, I mean, with endurance sports especially, you're definitely feeling some, you know, discomfort. So working through that and kind of eliminating, or, I don't know, just working with your mind and eliminating the additional suffering of the mind and kind of keeps me going in some respect.
Yeah, you say discomfort, and I'm sure for most of the listeners here, the experience would be, you know, way beyond discomfort. And clearly you've learned to work with that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do what you've done.
Yeah, and I think anyone can do what I do. So if anyone wants to row an ocean, go for it.
Yes.
Or run a marathon or do anything like this.
Yes, and I know for me what's so inspiring about what you're doing is just what you're pointing at, is anybody can do this. And it really, you know, helps me to see what's possible in my life. Well, you know, Katie's going to row across the Atlantic Ocean and bring awareness to the world's need for water. That's great. How can I contribute to life? How can I participate like that?
Mm-hmm.
Katie, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
How can we support you in what you're doing?
Well, you could go on the website, and if you make a $30 donation, you could come and join me and get your picture on the side of the boat. That's one way I'm trying to get people involved. A $30 donation provides one person access to safe drinking water for life. So the website is rowforwater.com.
Rowforwater.com. That is amazing that only $30 provides fresh drinking water for a person for life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that until you just told me that.
Yeah, they're very effective at what they do at the Blue Planet Run Foundation.
Uh-huh. Yes, and I've looked at their website as well, and it's really inspiring. You know, what's inspiring for me in talking with you and in doing awareness practice is I get much more tuned in to people who are really doing wonderful things for the planet.
Thank you.
Katie, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
And good luck on your row.
Thank you so much.
Okay, good night.
Okay, good night.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. inspired.
Right. I'm inspired too.
Is that just one of the most extraordinary things you've ever encountered in your life?
Yes.
You know, the I just love everything about it. I love that idea that fear is a burden that I'm just, what you say, too lazy to carry or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, just that whole attitude of whatever it is that you want to do and find another challenge for yourself. Find something else that you want to do that's going to light you up and make you hop out of bed in the morning and go out there and do it. But the thing that I love most, as I bet you can suspect, is that she does it. She's not just doing this for her own entertainment.
Yeah.
Although I sense that she does love what she does.
Yeah.
But to be doing it to assist other people in such a profound way just makes me almost happier than I can stand. And you know, of course, and probably most people listening to this know about our one thing revolution, you know, trying to get everybody on the planet to commit to doing one thing to make the world a better place. And talk about a one thing.
Yeah.
You know, what's the one thing that you're going to do? Well, I'm going to get in a boat and row across the ocean so that people can have fresh drinking water. And, of course, you mentioned with Katie the project in Cantalomba and what we went through getting a well there. And then after this amount of time, I can't remember now how many months the well has been there, but the difference that it's making. I mean, children are not dying of diarrhea.
Yes.
Adults are not dying of diarrhea. It's huge. It's just and I love that people like Katie are bringing this kind of consciousness to this issue, because for people like us, clean drinking water, it's just a given. You know, we might get a little worked up about whether the city water is really meeting the standards, but not to have water or to have water and know that drinking it is killing you.
Yeah.
Having water and having to give it to your children, even though you know it's killing them, is just I'm just so very glad that she's doing what she's doing. And, of course, I was very eager to have her talk with you, Michael, and have her on the Good News and Open Air, because I am hoping that there will be people out there listening who will hop right on over there and make a donation. I'm hoping that the Zen Center and Living Compassion between us all can become major sponsors of her endeavor. And so maybe when people do hop on over there, they would say that, you know, we sent them so that she will have a feeling of other meditators. I know she probably has a lot of other meditators out there supporting her, but when she's, you know, about halfway across and deep in meditation, to know that there'll be people all over the world also meditating with her, I think that would be a lovely thing to know.
Yes, it's a grand thing.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Cantalomba in the sense that every angle you look at it, it's just really wonderful and great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no downside.
Yeah.
It's not, what she's doing is not even hard on the planet.
So,
you know, I mean, I go out there and fly across the ocean with some regularity. You know, and each time kind of look at, well, you know, I'm going there hopefully to do something that's going to be helpful for people, and yet just going there is causing distress to the planet. So, but I'll tell you, I'm just not ready to row. I'm just not. But I will say that the next time I hear myself complaining about the length of time it takes to fly there, I'm just going to shut right on up and consider a route that, you know, takes 70 to 100 days.
70 to 100 days. Great.
It's all perspective, isn't it?
It's all perspective. Yeah. And it's fun with the technology these days that we can, you know, kind of be there in the boat with her.
Yeah, we can keep right on up with her. Yeah. Send her little messages.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry?
And just before we get to the callers who I know are out there, I hope they're out there, you know, we're doing two email classes simultaneously now. Because one is a 3-month or a year-long commitment, and then I wanted to do something with people who weren't in that class to try to, you know, support one another getting through this. It's a difficult time in the world for an awful lot of people, and then it's a difficult time of year for an awful lot of people. And so wanting to offer the support of practice, offer that for all of us to one another. That's something that also I'm reminded of with Katie. You know, that could feel very out there and alone and isolated if a person wanted to go in that direction. Or it could be something that brings a person back to a sense of oneness and possibility. And sometimes having folks say, I know you're out there. I'm thinking of you. I'm sending you strength and energy. That's something that we all need in Sangha. That's why the Buddha set it up that way, for there to be a Sangha, so that we can be that support and encouragement for one another. So,
yes.
It's good.
Indeed. Well stated, Sherry.
Thank you.
Sherry, I wanted to mention a couple things from the calendar coming up.
Oh, good.
So this Saturday, December 6th, you're going to be in San Jose at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment.
This is a true statement.
So that's exciting. Compassion.
Yeah, it's very short. It's like 9:30 in the morning till 12:30 or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's it on?
Compassion, the secret ingredient.
And it is, isn't it?
And you gave it away already in the title.
That's
and
a good
yet,
point.
And yet we have to hear it about 100 million times, don't we?
We do. We have to keep being reminded that we have to keep reminding one another that it is the secret ingredient. It is the secret to everything. It is what we're going for. Yeah. That's this December support group thing. I was just working on it before the radio show, and what I said to people was, it's clear from what people have written in already that everybody knows what the answer is. You know, we know what the answer is. We know everything about it, what we're up against and what we need to do and everything. But it's finding the willingness and having the support to find the willingness, it's the whole reminding one another, the whole holding hands and sticking together, so that we will do what it is that we know how to do. So we can know compassion is the secret ingredient, and yet in a moment we can get distracted and pulled off into some sort of conversation of nonsense and suffering and completely forget that we know what the secret ingredient is and that we can turn around, we can reach for it. And in the thinking of it, the remembering it, the turning toward it, and the reaching for it, we already have it. So, yeah. 100 million times at least.
At least.
We come back. And it's a good thing because there's just nothing better than coming back to compassion.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Sherry, two other things on the calendar I want to mention. There'll be a New Year's retreat in San Rafael, which is a new location, and I'm very excited about that.
I am too, Michael. It's going to be a whole new and different thing for us. There are a lot of people out there who are traumatized by our retreats because they're always work retreats. And a New Year's work retreat can be daunting, I admit, depending on what the weather is like. But this one is going to be one in which we are more introspective and restful in our approach to the new year. So it's not going to be working meditation. It's going to be workshops and sitting and walking and exercises, to facilitate the transition from one year to the next. So it's a beautiful facility, and there are going to be some wonderful folks there. So I'm looking forward to it. Always good food and yoga and good sitting and walking in the woods and like that.
It's great. And the last thing I want to mention is the Reflective Listening Buddies Practice is accepting new participants, and the next quarter begins January 15th.
January 15th. Good. Boy, that is a dynamite program. So I'm hoping that people will avail themselves of it.
Yes. And I can tell you one thing people have been availing themselves of, and that is the phone lines.
Woo! We better get going.
Nonstop. Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. You?
Good, good. What's going on?
Well, I want to express my gratitude just right away for that first good news update and the conversation after. I was just taking that image in of the person in the ocean and that being the intent of the Living Beyond Karma class, it really just kind of went straight to my heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because in so many ways, it sounds like that was maybe one of the reasons we started the class is people saying how they felt alone. And even though we might be in the midst of work and family, we still often can feel like we're out there in the middle of the ocean.
Yes. And in fact, it's sort of worse than that. We're out there in the middle of the ocean with egocentric karmic conditioning.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we don't even, there we are with our family and friends or whatever, and we can't even really be with them or appreciate them because we're so consumed by this other relationship that with somebody who really doesn't like us.
Exactly. And that's certainly something that this class is affording me to see more clearly.
Yes.
So one of the things I wanted to call in about is all through the year, the little commitments that I've made that I've managed to keep. So one of them was to call into the radio show.
Good.
This is part of that. And just doing as many of the practice opportunities as I can. There are some I haven't kept, but I feel like so much more that I've been able to avail myself of the support and turn away from conditioning all for as many times as I can when it says that I can't or I shouldn't or I'm too tired or whatever. And I'm really starting to get that do it anyway and that extra dose of compassion seems more available now. Sometimes do it anyway is kind of a little tough love, and sometimes it has a little bit of a warm hand to it.
Yes. Yes, because what we're going for is that that mentoring moment where you know, I come home and I'm tired and I don't want to and it's really hard, but that unconditional acceptance inside of me says, yeah, but this is important and it's for you. So come on, we'll do it together and it'll be fine. And it always is, because the truth of the matter is there is that strength. It just needs some support and encouragement.
Yeah, and that was one thing I wanted to talk a little bit about. We've done a lot of hiking this year, and we're not having winter yet. So this weekend we went out again and had to use snowshoes, which is something I don't have a lot of practice at, but my husband has a ton of practice at. And we went along and got to a point where it was, you know, maybe a little questionable whether I should keep going. And he said, well, you know, do you care if I go on? And I said, no, go ahead. And then, you know, I just looked at what he was doing, and, you know, it didn't look that hard. And I, you know, I knew there was a nice view at the top, and I kind of thought, you know, well, it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And it was fine, and I got, you know, I went on up there and everything. But I was asking myself kind of, well, so what's different in this situation? You know, Because a lot of times when I go and there's something hard physically like that, there's a lot of conversation about how bad it's going to be or what's going to happen or, you know, that kind of gets me all worked up. And yet at this point, you know, there was some kind of conversation, but then there was something else. And it's starting to dawn on me that there's a place there where willingness takes over. And this the person you had on the Good News update really put it well, but I was just exploring my own process and really seeing that for someone there, it's that really wants to be there and do that and be challenged by it and be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. You know, one of the things that when I'm out about the world that I find most distressing is modern parenting that consists of, now be careful, now don't get on that, now you're going to fall, you're going to hurt yourself, now get down. Okay? And what I remember is actually never hearing that as a child. And I think maybe that part of that was because I was a country kid and most of what we were doing our mother never knew about. But that in itself is significant, you know, that we were able to just go and do without anybody watching us. And we did crazy things and we actually got really hurt. But there was not that information that says it's not worth doing it because something you don't want to have happen might happen.
Right. And yeah, it's the same process, this whole thing with conditioned mind about anything, even just mm-hmm. going to sit for your 20 minutes in the evening. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that whole winding it all up to be some awful experience that doesn't turn out, it's no basis in reality whatsoever. I mean,
yeah.
You wouldn't have snowshoed 3 miles to have an awful experience. That wasn't the point.
Right.
Or, you know, drag yourself all the way upstairs to have to sit on the cushion for an awful experience, and that's not what's
right.
happening. But all the information is to tell you that that is what's happening.
Yeah, and all of the information that we get in life, not all, because things do happen in life that are very, very difficult and painful and cause a lot of suffering to people, but most of what we experience in life every day is not that.
Right.
Good things, and yet if we listen to conditioning, it's just one hellish nightmare after another. Or, as you're indicating, it's going to be pretty soon. Okay,
right.
It's all right now.
Right.
But boy, if you take that next step, it's going to be awful.
Right.
Yeah, and to bring conscious awareness to the fact that, well, actually it wasn't awful. Well, neither was that.
Right,
well, it's
right.
still not awful. I'm
right.
still not having an awful experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I've just been noticing a couple of different ways that conditioning is either really loud and saying how awful it is or kind of lulls you to sleep with stupid dust and, you know, kind of mumbles how awful it's going to be. The message is the same. It's sort of the way it distracts you to give you the message that seems to be a little bit confusing sometimes.
Right. It's sort of like medicine, right? Sometimes it's a pill. Sometimes it's a shot. Sometimes it's a, right? It comes in different forms.
Right.
So that it seems like it's a different experience.
Right.
And yet what you're catching on to is it's not. It's the same thing over and over and over. And to take it back to that awful, it's what's awful.
Yes. And I appreciate the support group and the email. Having a koan like that is really helpful for me because then I can just keep coming back to that every time I get a little off and don't know what's going on. It's like, oh, well, maybe I should ask that question.
Right. And having one question, so we should say what it is, because this radio show will go into the archives. And 3 years from now, somebody will be listening to it and go, what koan? What are they talking about? But the koan is, how does this, whatever it is that's going on, right, whatever I've been caught up in now, how does this lead to separation, or how does this maintain the illusion that I'm separate from life?
Right.
Yeah. And so anything, any conversation that I'm in, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm noodling along about, well, gee, I just don't know. I just don't feel quiet. I'm just not sure what, okay, that's it. It's not like I need to identify what's going on. Anything that has captured my attention and is taking me out of the moment is worth asking that question about.
Absolutely. I had an interaction this afternoon, and it just wouldn't stop. You know, it was just running this whole thing over and over, and I'd think about something else, and soon I'd be planning for the whatever it was again, you know, and I was like, okay, well, there we go.
Yeah.
Run it through that question and see.
Yeah.
And it's the same process I do a lot, but in that case, I was just able to step back see that. So I'm very grateful for all of these supports. I know I'm not out there alone in the ocean, and it makes me feel a little better.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll see you at New Year's.
Excellent. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we are going to have a word for sponsors here, and then we'll be right back.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues.
From now until December 31st, Zen Blues Quartet will be donating 20% of all revenues generated from CD sales to Living Compassion and Open Air Talk Radio. This music project exists because we learned that how you do anything is how you do everything. So we get to make great music, you get to listen to great music, and together we can support the fantastic works of Living Compassion.
Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, 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 what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Sherry, we have 8 more callers in the queue here.
Yikes. Okay.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Rico.
Hi, Rico.
Hi, Sherry and Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, this is a report and also a request for some guidance.
Okay.
And so I'm active in the Reflective Listening Program.
Uh-huh.
And over the last 10 weeks, I've had some interactions with Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And he suggested that I start noticing what is the process of distraction when I sort of lose my focus when I'm reflecting back on the listening program.
Uh-huh.
So I did.
So, Rico, let me just clarify for people. You and I are on a Reflective Listening Buddies call, and you're talking along, and I'm going to reflect you, and then all of a sudden I've sort of lost what it was that you said that I'm trying to reflect.
Exactly.
Is that okay?
Exactly. So Dave gave me an exercise or a project to start identifying that process.
Mm-hmm.
And I I have some idea, but what would come back again and again is something that you and I have spoken about on these check-ins is about, it's almost like a default phrase that comes up that, well, I'm a little off, but it's okay.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So, for example, last Tuesday, I'm very committed to listening to these programs, and I spaced out and went for a walk, and then when I came back in, I realized, oh, I had missed a show, and it was like the beginning of a attack or a negativity, and instead it was like, well, it's okay. And the same thing happened the next night when I had my date for my reflective listening. I totally forgot about it, and fortunately I had a cell phone, and my buddy picked me up on that. And again, I found myself automatically forgiving myself, saying, well, that's okay.
Uh-huh.
So what Dave says, and completely caught me off guard, is that this, what I perceive to be mentoring and encouragement and support, Dave suggests that it's a way in which conditioning has found to keep me unawares.
Uh-huh.
So I'm confused.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, is this where I cast my ballot?
Oh, I don't know what that means.
Oh, well, is this the thing that you wanted me to address?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go along with Dave on this one, not surprisingly. And yet, I'm also going to go along with you. And the way that works to me is you're on the right track with it's okay. Because it is okay. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, in both of these, in all the situations that you've mentioned, it's not like chastising yourself is going to get you where you want to be. It's not like getting a beating from conditioning or from self-hatred is going to turn back the clock and enable you to remember something that you didn't remember. So it is okay. It is okay. And you want to stop it. So I go to one of my favorite quotes, which is, I love you exactly as you are, and I'll help you be however you want to be. Right? So there's somebody, and I suspect I know who that is, in you, who has made a commitment to listen to the radio show. Yeah?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And because it supports your practice, because you know, it all of that. We get why that's the case. And so it's not okay that something goes on that prevents him from having that thing that he wants. Because it's a very good thing that he wants. Right? It's going to lead away from suffering. It's going to give him more freedom. It's going to offer him tools for being more centered. You know, these are good things. This is part of his spiritual practice. And so it's not okay that there is some process, and again, I suspect that, of course, that there's nothing accidental about this. Conditioning slides in there with a distraction at the last minute, and then you kind of wake up after the fact, once it's too late. So, yes, it's okay that that happens. It's a very good opportunity to see how really clever conditioning is and how it can distract you, how that whole process works. And then you start bringing conscious, compassionate awareness to it so that that guy who wants to do awareness practice has support. And that, to me, is where the real mentoring comes in. do we want him to feel bad because he got distracted and lost an opportunity that he wanted? No, we don't want him to feel bad. We want him to have the support that he needs to have his life work the way his heart wants it to work.
I hear the words, and where I'm a little bit lost is that you said it's better to be supportive than to be chastised, but that you say that I should stop this, that this automatic, and it's not just limited to missing a reflective call or open ear live show. It can happen 10 times a day that if I see that, for example, I made my lunch and I put it in the saucepan and then I came back 15 minutes later thinking it's ready to see that I forgot to turn on the gas, the same automatic support comes up saying, oh, that's okay.
Yeah, and it is okay, but you want to start bringing conscious awareness to how it's happening.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, because he's disappointed, right? The person who misses the radio show, yes, it's okay that that happened, but it's not okay that he's never allowed to do what he wants to do because conditioning keeps distracting him. So, you know, if we, are we together on that now?
Yeah, I'm trying to get it.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's a little kid who says, you know, I forgot to do my homework, you know, I just forgot. I got caught up playing and I forgot to do it. Well, that's okay. And we have to learn how not to get caught up in something that causes us to have ramifications later that hurt us. We have to learn that. And that's what we're learning in awareness practice. We're learning to be present because that's what really takes care of us. The it's okay or it's all right part is, to me, where that comes in is judgment, criticism, self-hatred, beatings, feeling bad, guilt, whatever of those we can think of. They really have no place in awareness practice. They're something that conditioning, socialization, has brought into our lives as a way of controlling us. Right?
Yes, I see that.
Yeah, but they're two completely separate things. The fact that people mush them together doesn't mean they have anything to do with each other. It just means people mush them together.
So my question then comes back to what I perceive to be mentoring, in fact, turns out to be a possible way for conditioning to still keep me out of awareness practice.
Yep. So one of the things that I like best in this world is to be going along and realize that I missed something. Okay? I just missed it. And whether that's, you know, I got all the way to the car and I don't have my car keys, or I, you know, something like that. I walk past the address that I'm going to, that kind of thing. Because what it says is, it seems from the inside as if I'm always here, but I just got evidence that there was a blip.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the exciting part of it.
That's exactly it, Sherry. That's exactly describes the moment. Oh.
Yep.
And the custom had been to, you stupid idiot.
That's right.
And so so it seems like that beating has shifted to a kinder voice. But again, apparently it's just another way of the voices to hold hold things intact.
Well, it can be. And it could really be somebody who simply says, hey, that's okay. But, you know, a friend, I could have a friend who would support me in things that are not actually good for me. You know, somebody could say to me, so I get out there and I don't have my keys because I was off thinking about something else. Okay? So somebody who loves me would say, hey, that's okay. You know, you scratch keys. But that's true. It is okay. But what I'm going for is second by second by second presence. So it's not that I'm a bad person, it's that I want to pay closer attention. And I just saw a place where I was not present. And so for me, it's a rub my little hands together because, yes, all right, now how is that happening? Now I'm going to look for those moments when I get some sort of information that says I wasn't there. Hmm. Because being there is what I want.
So if I understand, when these blips arise or when these distractions arise or when I space out, as opposed to automatically offering some mentoring, I revert back to awareness practice with unconditional acceptance.
That's right. And it can follow. Hey, that's okay. Now, let's figure out what just happened here. It's fine. Okay. We're not going to change that. You didn't turn the burner on. How does that kind of thing happen? And then it's not a figuring out. It's not going up into the head to go, okay, well, I must have, but it's like, I got to pay closer attention. Okay. So these are the kinds of places where this tends to happen. Hey, what's going on here? What am I doing? What am I? And as you watch in that way, like a detective, okay, like a really devoted doctor looking for the cause of some condition that nobody's been able to diagnose. Okay, just looking, watching, finding every little piece of information, every sign, every signal, because what I'm looking for is in there somewhere. I just haven't seen it yet.
Mm. I'm beginning to put. Two dots together, and that is that it seems like conditioning can use any sort of loving kindness and acceptance as a place in which we can go to sleep.
Conditioning, yes. The thing that we can know is conditioning will use everything, which is why we cannot. I mean, we can snooze for as long as we want. Thank goodness it's set up so that we could snooze for lifetimes if that's what we chose. But those of us who want to wake up and in suffering don't want to snooze. So what we can know is there isn't ever going to be a single moment when it's safe to go to sleep. Because conditioning is always looking for an angle, always trying to get a little wedge in there to get started, to make a case, and we know it's going to lead to suffering. So you're in practice with this for a couple of weeks, okay?
Okay.
And then let us know.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Rico.
Thanks so much, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have many more callers here.
I know. I don't know. We just need to figure out a way to expand time and then shrink it back down at the end of the hour.
Yes. Okay, next caller. You are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
This is Grigsby.
Hey, Grigsby.
Can you hear me okay? Hey.
Yes. You sound like you're next door rather than on the other side of the world.
Well, I'm talking through my computer. It's amazing.
It is a great time to be alive, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah. Well, what's going on the other side of the world?
Well, I'm really wanting to say my practice has allowed me to do something that I'm finding increasingly exciting in my life. Being over here and being able to teach and work with a lot of nice people. And just like Katie rowing the Atlantic, I couldn't be doing this without practice.
Practice is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because those voices would have had you packed up and back in a world of misery in a really short time, wouldn't they, if they'd had their way?
I'm sure they would.
Yeah.
That's how I spent a lot of my life before I got into this practice.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to be sure that you were giving plenty of credit where credit is due, and that you spend a part of every day at least in a conversation of gratitude to that person who is doing the practice, who makes those choices, who continues to turn the attention there and to show up and do what he needs to do in order to continue to provide the life that you've actually always dreamed of.
Yeah, that's something I definitely seek to do, to expand the gratitude. What I have to say is a case where I think I know the answers, but where I'm having some, I could use some help in being able to bring more awareness to a situation. And the situation in general is has to do with a part of myself that demands perfection and that doesn't feel, tells me I'm not capable of the work, mostly as a teacher, that I face. So I experience these voices or this conditioning as pressure that gets put on me. The conditioning I can see is putting it on me, and then often I find myself blaming people outside of myself who are in the position of assigning work to me. So a little bit more is a little bit more of the pattern is I find myself identifying with the victim, and there's an attraction. There's an attraction. I see this attraction to wanting to be the victim.
Oh, yeah.
And to justify or hold on to a certain anger that's directed outside of myself.
Oh, yeah. The anger feels powerful. The victimization justifies the anger. The victimization also implies that a person is not responsible. You know, it's not my fault. So there's it's somebody else's fault, and this is being done to me, and yeah, that's a very, very popular approach to life. Painful.
I guess I'm I can say it's seductive also.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And what you're describing is the MO of the illusion of a separate self.
Yeah.
So there you are in that situation that increasingly you're enjoying and appreciating, you're loving what you're having a chance to do and being there and all of that. And so how is identity going to stay the center of a suffering world, stay separate from all of that life that you increasingly love? Well, there has to be something wrong. There's somebody who is victimizing. Then there's that kind of self-righteous victimization. And that illusion of a separate self gets to maintain itself even in the face of a very enjoyable life.
It's helpful to hear you describing it so clearly. And it's what I've been beginning to have more awareness of, this whole pattern.
Yeah. You know, Grigsby, it occurs to me that to the degree that you can do this, you know, with whatever your living circumstances are, but whether it's draw this person out on a piece of paper or get a really big piece of paper and draw the person out, you know, kind of life-size, put clothes on him. Draw the little bubbles that come up, you know, like the cartoons about what he's saying and what he's thinking and that sort of thing, so that you can start to see that illusion of a separate self as separate from you.
Right, right.
Yeah?
I follow you.
Yeah, because what that illusion wants to do is be you and have you feel that you, being it, are separate from life.
Right, right.
So if you can, yeah, if you can be the conscious, compassionate awareness, the intelligent human who is in life, and that, of course, includes everything, you know. It includes unfortunate interactions and rude people and impatience and, you know, all of those very human things that we all go through every day. So I'm not trying to present this as some sort of Buddha-like cruise through life, but that there's the human who is there living the life, engaged with people, the sights, the smells, the sounds, the all of that. And then there is that illusion of a separate self who's over there grousing and complaining and pointing out how other people are doing this or that and how he's suffering as a result of it. And okay, so for you to see yourself as that authentic human incarnation and that illusion of a separate self as separate from you, I think will be a great exercise.
Yeah, it makes me think of the Voices cartoons.
Yes.
As a good model.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. Because you can feel how they are over there. Of course, over there is, I'm pointing across the room, actually, but they feel like they're inside your head, right?
Right.
And they're doing their plotting and planning and, you know, well, let's get him to think about this. And how about if you point out to him how they're giving him too much work and then slide in that one about how he's not really equal to it in the first place? And yeah.
Right, right. Thank you so much for that suggestion. I'll take that on.
Good,
that's
and
an
let
assignment.
Us know.
Okay,
let us know.
All right.
Yeah, we have this great connection. We might as well use it.
Well, I think so.
All right. Thanks, Grigsby.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Grigsby.
I can't say goodnight to Grigsby because it's morning where he is.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Grigsby.
Thank you.
Yes, if it's morning for Angela in South Korea, then it's morning for Grigsby also, isn't it?
Yeah, in China, yeah. Absolutely. It's just those poor people in between, you know, who have to drag themselves out of bed in the middle of the night and dial that phone. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Sherry, we have four more callers, and we have about 9 minutes left.
Okay, well,
so we'll
just
to
do
who
our
we
best.
Get to. Yes. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's John in Los Angeles.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Good. What's going on in your world?
Well, okay. Well, we have 9 minutes, so I'll jump to it. I'm calling. I'm calling for support because there's a sort of a conflict in my practice where I'm getting a lot of messages from my life that are really kind of challenging and uncomfortable, and their conditioning is using those to sort of support why I'm just sort of not doing things correctly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's and they're strong messages. I've had quite a few deaths recently in my immediate community. A woman who was staying at my house drove to the market and got in an accident and killed someone. And,
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there was a series of things like that in a very short period of time. And and a lot of people in the community, the professional community that I work in, are struggling. Two of the people who I work with directly, one is struggling with cancer and the other is losing his home. So there's all these messages that are coming in about something's wrong.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And they're really strong messages. I mean, they're you know, credible messages about, you know, strong emotional reactions to, you know, people I care about dying, or people I really care about struggling with severe health issues or logistical issues, and then my own, you know, life issues that are concurrent with what a lot of people are experiencing right now. You know.
Now, how does this get to there's something wrong with you?
Well, this is the interesting part that I've been looking at. It feels personal. That's the feeling aspect. There's some message in it that's like,
John, did you bring on this economic crash?
No. I don't, that part doesn't feel personal. Too many people.
Oh, okay.
No. That part doesn't feel personal.
But people close to you having problems somehow feels personal.
Well, in a certain way, I guess the only way I can describe it is that in a certain way, there's a. I feel like I've been in the rowboat for a while. And I've kind of gotten used to being in the rowboat, and I have had a practice for. I realized I've had a sitting practice for almost 30 years now, and I've had a lot of experience where I was disidentified, and I think that my experience is that conditioning has been looking for opportunities to engage me and distract me, and it's becoming very good at
adept.
It. Yeah, very good at it recently. And the personal aspect is it just, to be honest, it's just more overwhelming. And I just kind of want to, you know, kind of lay down and go, when you get to the point where somebody's leaving your house and they go to the market and then they go to jail because they've killed somebody, it gets like you're kind of looking around going, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
That's my experience right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel overwhelmed and somewhat unsupported. And it's not. It may or may not be true, but that's the way it feels.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it would, because what's interpreting the life circumstances, of course, is an illusion of a separate self.
Yeah, I understand.
Right?
That. Yeah, I do understand.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, and so that's the, you know, the assignment I gave Grigsby might be a good one for you as well. Because, you know, there, and not to minimize what's going on in your life at all, because, you know, that's a lot. And in most lives or in many lives, before it's over, we go through those times when it's a lot. What we tend to lose sight of in our world is how much of the world lives in those circumstances all the time. So when we were told that on average 5 people a day die in Cantalomba, most of them children, but I can remember just sitting there looking at the other Americans who were there at the time with just this kind of, oh my God, reaction. You know, how is that possible? This is a very small community.
Yeah.
And so we don't live in a world like that. And so we can easily lose sight of the fact that, yes, that is, all of those things are absolutely possible. The fact that they don't happen more often is what's kind of remarkable.
I guess, it's funny. My first response is I hear you, and I you know, it's funny. I listened to a talk with Pema Chodron the other day about that exact same thing, that, you know, I'm experiencing difficulty and someone else is, and I'm not alone in this experience. The challenging thing for me is it seems, for whatever reason, that my karma is to be around a lot of this particular type of life energy. And, you know, I took care of my whole family while they were dying. And that was a 10-year period of my life. And I'm not afraid of that particular process or those issues. I think the thing I'm feeling right now is that my practice is being diverted fairly steadily and regularly by the interpretation of the messages, and I'm not really sure what I can do.
Well, I'm sure.
I'm sure you are, so that's why I'm
calling. I'm very sure.
There was also a lot of resistance to calling you, by the way.
Oh, I bet.
I'm not really into complaining.
I can tell you, I can promise you, the devil has you and is not eager to turn loose. So the secret, and this will be no surprise to you, is that you have got to turn your attention away from that story and back to what is so.
The part I think I go with is, which part is so?
The part that is so is that this is life, okay? This is life. Life is as fond of death as it is of life.
Right.
Okay? It's as fond of pain as pleasure. Yeah?
Yep.
Now we want to deny this. We try hard to deny it. We try hard to avoid it. But it is the reality. And so this is what is so. This is the way it is.
Okay.
What we have available to us is the possibility to, number one, be at one with life, and to feel the experience of life unfolding, rather than attempting to separate ourselves from life and decide which parts of life we approve of, like, want to attach to, cling to.
I see. Yeah, it's funny. I got a similar guidance in sitting group about, you know, what if it was just okay that you're distracted and feel really tired and want to just lay down and kind of hide your head? What if that was okay?
Yeah, exactly. What else would be available if your life force wasn't going into avoiding that experience?
Yeah, it's. I know we're running out of time. I'm not sure if I'm avoiding as much as I'm just overwhelmed, and I don't.
But overwhelm is a story.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yep.
So now I happen to know you, and so I know that you can relate to my stories about depression.
Yes.
And so, again, realizing that as long as I was in a depression, feeling there was something wrong with it, I hate the way I feel. I don't have any energy. I can't move. I can't do anything. What's the matter with me? I must be really sick. I've got to be dying. I couldn't feel this bad and not be dying. Okay?
I'm not laughing.
Get off
at
of that
you.
Story.
Yes, I understand.
Huh?
I wasn't laughing at you. I was laughing with you. I understand.
Yeah. So getting out of that story, dropping that and saying, okay, how much energy do I have? Because that's how much I have. And now, what do I want to do with that energy? And suddenly I realized I had plenty of energy to do everything that I needed to do and wanted to do. And in fact, the more I turned my attention to the energy I had, the more energy I had. And what I realized, of course, is that the energy I had was being sucked up by that story. Okay? So overwhelm is a story. Every time we start thinking about what's wrong and what isn't working and how that's going into the future, and that we're going to feel overwhelmed and depressed and exhausted. And so we turn our attention back to, so one more, and then I do know we have to go.
Okay.
The old Zen story about the guy falls over the edge of a cliff, and as he's falling down the side of the cliff, he grabs onto a vine, and there he is suspended halfway down this cliff. He's going to fall to his death. There's no way he's going to climb up. Oh, my God, what is he going to do? Down below, the tigers are pacing and looking up because they know sooner or later he's going to fall. Up at the top, you got to love this part, there's one black mouse and one white mouse, symbolizing the world of duality, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And they start gnawing on the vine that is supporting him. He looks next to him, and there is this beautiful ripe strawberry. Okay? He pops it in his mouth. Life is good.
I got it.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
Sarah,
take care
you very
of
much.
Yourself.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, John. You've been listening to another great edition of Open Air with Sherry Huber.
I know. I apologize to the people who did not get on the call. And I don't know. If we keep going in this way, Michael, we might have to add another radio show during the week. But we'll see. We'll keep doing the best we can.
We'll keep doing the best we can. And I always encourage people to call in way before the show starts.
And yeah. And we'll all just keep rolling.
Sounds great.
All
Thank
right.
you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.